Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya, where we talk all about Lyme and beyond, because as most of us know, Lyme rarely travels alone. I created this podcast to offer you hope and to remind you that healing is possible because I healed from my own 13-year journey. Although it was exhausting physically, emotionally, and financially, it truly was a blessing as it reshaped my mind, body, and soul. In this space, we share raw and real conversations with those who have made it to the other side of the journey, along with breaking down different approaches and topics with practitioners. My goal is to make you feel less alone, more empowered, and confident in being your own advocate. So thank you so much for tuning in today. And if you're looking for more tips and resources, I share everything I learned along my journey on my LymeAndBeyondWithTanya.com website. So my guest today is actually a first-time guest, although he's been on my radar for some time. So I'm super excited to bring him to the show today. I've got Dr. Marty Ross. He is a functional medicine physician out of Seattle, Washington. He is the founder of Treat Lyme, which is an online educational platform, as well as the author of Hacking Lyme Disease, an action guide to wellness. All of that sounds so amazing. But what I also have heard about him in the community, so my reputation, perspective of him, whatever you want to call it, is that there are answers. Let's find them. And I think that that's really what he portrays. And so I'm just really excited to have him and have this conversation today. So, Dr. Marty Ross, so nice to meet you, and thank you for joining me.
Tanya, thank you for having me, and thank you for the good work you've been doing too. I appreciate I got an opportunity to listen to some of your podcasts in advance of this, and sounds like you're doing some really good stuff. So glad to be here.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So, if you don't mind, unless I'm wrong, I don't believe you battled Lyme yourself. So, could you take
No.
it just a moment and w what led you down this path, right? Because we really
Yeah.
appreciate these practitioners that will treat us, but I
Right.
always get curious about what prompted it.
Yeah, very interesting. So back in 2000, I decided to start pursuing treating people doing functional medicine and integrative medicine, and I opened up my first practice. And one of the first things I added in 2000 was acupuncture. I got trained through a program, a certificate program through UCLA that physicians use. And so my practice was a family practice. I was doing some herbal medicine, some herbal, some vitamins and supplements, but essentially handling primary care problems. When I added in acupuncture, my waiting room started filling up with people with fibromyalgia. And that then had me start looking at, well, how do I manage this? And I fell into following a physician named Jacob Teitelbaum. Jacob wrote a book called From Fatigue to Fantastic. And so I trained with him, actually. I did went through some of his trainings, and I learned a kind of an integrated medicine approach to fatigue, and fibromyalgia is part of that spectrum. So anyhow, my practice eventually moved from being family practice, primary care, to being almost 100% exclusively people living with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. And in 2004, one of my patients said, "I think I have Lyme. Can you test me for it?" And I thought, and I have to tell you now, I did the worst test. I did a PCR, looking to see if there was the genetic material of Lyme in a person. And the reason that's the worst test is it will only be positive 30% of the time. It's not the best way to test for Lyme. But if you find the genetic material, it's hard to refute that the germ is in you. So her test came back positive. Her genetic test for Lyme, PCR test, came back positive. And I thought to myself, I wonder if a lot of these people with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue might have Lyme. So I went and tested everyone in my practice with those diagnoses, and about
With the
30%.
same test that you
No,
should didn't want to do. You already upgraded at
I
this point. Okay. All right. Just want
upgraded.
to
I upgraded to doing what was then a Western blot test through Igenix at that time. And so about 35%, 30%, 35% of my practice that I tested, people in my practice I tested, came back positive for Lyme. And so I was like, oh my gosh. And so, the reason I tell that story is I also want listeners to know that if you happen to have a fatigue and fibromyalgia diagnosis, it's got to be explored to see if there might be some Lyme as part of that, as the cause of it, basically, too. And so, but yeah, it was eye-opening. And the minute that I found that, I thought, well, I have to treat this. And so it was really good because I was able to take a lot of the functional medicine, integrative medicine, training I had from Jacob Teitelbaum, and how do you deal with adrenal dysfunction and thyroid dysfunction and dealing with too many yeast in the intestines, all those things that I now do came out of working from a fibromyalgia chronic fatigue approach. And then I had to layer in the understanding of how to figure out if somebody might have a Bartonella or a Lyme, and then how do I address that? But yeah, so that's how I got into it, basically.
Wow. Okay. And I love that you did all this and then you got curious, right? Like that's one of my favorite words because I think we should all get curious about things. But you
Oh,
brought up
yeah.
something
Yeah.
interesting. So, of course, besides being diagnosed that I was crazy or
Yeah.
stressed or
Yeah.
overworked or depressed, I eventually got a fibromyalgia diagnosis and I went to an actual, there was a clinic not far from where I lived. I think it was like the fibromyalgia clinic.
Yeah,
Makes me
yeah.
wonder. It makes me almost want to look up that doctor to see if maybe it's the Lyme clinic now, right? Like,
Could be. It could very well
interesting.
be.
Yeah. And then
Yeah.
as I'm, checking out books, date myself, I guess, checking out books at the library on fibromyalgia, I'm like, okay, yeah, this doesn't sound like fun, but no, people can kind of live a life with fibromyalgia. I can't live a life. Like this isn't it. It's there's something else. So, but anyways, so well, I love that you're part of this community because, like I mentioned earlier, it really is hard to find practitioners that can validate us and that want to
Right.
get curious and want to figure out the root problem. And it truly is the root. And that's what people need to understand is that it is not just about killing our pathogens. It is so much more. But I understand that because sometimes people, it takes decades to get a diagnosis, right? Okay, fine.
Yeah.
I finally have Lyme disease. Let me just throw everything at it and kill it. Whoa, probably not a good idea, right? Like there's so many layers to it. And so we're going to break those down with you today. And I'm
Sure,
really
sure.
excited about it because I truly think that it's the mind, body, soul connection. It is, and I know one of your the big four, one of them is kind of that whole connection. And so I'm excited for you just to kind of walk us down that and your approach and the different things on it. And I'll probably interrupt you a million times because I want to know more, but I'll just let you start. So the big four, right? So what are they? What's the first one? Let's go down that one first.
So it's kind of a process I go through in how I analyze and also how I recommend management and treatment. And so the first of what I call the big four, the big four that are involved, one is infections, hidden infections, ones that may not be obvious to your primary care doctor, for instance, or even infectious disease doctors, because they have their heads in the sand basically on this, but hidden infections. And then the second one would be toxins and toxic load. And the big one I would put in there is mold toxicity. It's just a huge issue. The next one would be, as a result of these issues, a lot of the your body dysfunctions that develop, whether that's immune suppression, dysregulation, mitochondria, your energy factories get dysregulated, hormonal disruption that can happen from these things. So we need to deal with those as well too. And then finally, I mean, one of the more profound areas that I'm really having a lot of interest these days in is the what I call the brain body feedback loop, or a lot of people may know it as something called brain retraining or limbic system training. And I want to make it clear, I'm not saying it's in your head, but there is a way that our brains can get tricked into holding a lot of these symptoms as well too. And so that would fall into that brain body feedback loop and brain retraining kind of idea. So those would be the four big areas.
I love that. And truly, like, we'll kind of dive. Actually, I'll just save it when we dive into that. So let's go to, the hidden infections, right? And I believe that there are a lot of what I call the hidden stressors, which are one you just mentioned, mold, right? I think it's mold, parasites, metals, and even oral health, right? Like maybe something's in your mouth. So there's so many layers, and then you don't just get the Lyme or the co-infections. You get Candida, you get Epstein-Barr, you get mast cell activate, like you get, that's why it's Lyme
All
and
of
beyond,
this.
right? Like you get
It's all of
everything.
that. So a kind of a framework, as I'm looking within this big four, under it all, is these conditions, whether it's infections, and that can be too many yeast in your intestines as part of that, or toxins like mold toxicity. There's a common thread that they all have, and that is that in the immune system trying to deal with these problems, your white blood cells and trying to get rid of that toxin or get rid of the Lyme or too many yeast in your intestines, your white blood cells are going to manufacture a bunch of chemicals called cytokines. And cytokines are good and bad. On the good side, they actually turn the immune system on to be able to go after whatever that they're trying to go after. But the big problem that happens is the immune system doesn't do good well enough in some people. Some people it does. Some people, the immune system can adequately take care of all this stuff. But in some people, it doesn't. And so what it'll try to do, it'll start doing is it'll wind up trying harder and harder, and it'll make too many cytokines.
The
And so,
cytokine dump, right?
And so what the cytokines are is they give you insomnia. They disrupt your hormonal systems, including the brain's managing your thyroid and your female hormones, male hormones, adrenals, et cetera. And they also then, the cytokines lead to body pain. They make you hurt all over. I think I said already, they disturb your sleep. But the underpinning of all of these illnesses and the reason they all can look alike is too many cytokines. And so that's the big thing. When somebody comes to see me, I need to figure out what's the major infection that might be triggering this cytokine mess, if you will. And I have to listen to the story to help guide me in that. Meaning, did they get a tick bite? Or have they had tick exposures? Or what do the symptoms tell me that the infections might be? I also have to be very careful because I know a number of times in my practice, I have found people that came in with solid story of Lyme. I mean, they had a tick bite attached, they had a bullseye rash.
Bullseye, yeah.
And then maybe 3 or 4 months later, they started getting really sick. And it would be very easy to go down that pathway and say, this is Lyme disease, right? Right. And even had solid positive Lyme testing, all right. But one of the clues that we always have to do, I do, is hear the story. And the story, when I start talking to my patients, one of the key things I like to do is what happened in your life that was a major event around the time you got sick, all right? And yeah, did
You
you want to say
nailed it.
something
You
there?
nailed it. No, you just nailed it.
Okay. And so one of the things sometimes people will say, yeah, well, I had moved. My partner and I had split up and I moved into a new home that was new to me. And then I'll go, was it really a new home? They go, no. And I said, well, tell me more about that house. And so I'll find, as I walk through the house, tell me about the bedroom. Tell me about this. And I'll go back to the bedroom. What was that you found on the wall? And they'll tell me, they'll say, basically, they were living in black mold. And that's when they got sick. Okay. So I have found situations in doing detective work is that basically, yes, they had a story that looked really like Lyme, but it was the black mold that got them sick, right? And so I like to go after the thing that was probably the most likely thing that caused all the dysfunction to settle in. And I have found times where I have a story like that, where a mom who's a nurse came in with her son who was about 4 years old, and he'd been told by a practitioner here in town that he needed to get on immediate IV antibiotics for his Lyme. And the mom wasn't trusting that, the nurse. So she came in to visit with me. And I said, well, I said, yeah, I hear Lyme here, but I'm not clear that's the issue. Let's test for mold toxicity because your son had the black mold on the wall. And sure enough, the mold toxins came back extremely high. And we spent 4 months. The main thing we did was to pull toxins out. I didn't put him on one germ killer at all. I did support his adrenals. I took care of doing some supports for his immune system. I worked with some things to lower cytokines like curcumin and glutathione are great at lowering cytokines. But essentially, all I did was binders. And within 4 months, he was 100% well. 100%. So the one thing I see, and I see this because, in my practice, I wind up seeing people that have seen other practitioners. I wind up being the doc some people
The
will see
last
whenever
one.
they,
We've
yeah,
seen
the
everyone.
last
Now
one.
I'm coming to you.
Right,
Yeah.
right. Yeah. And so I'm always very careful to re-review everything because I think some people too easily get caught up saying it's Lyme and don't look deeper for what maybe an underlying cause could be that's even deeper than that too. So yeah, so I know to look for that. So
I
yeah.
love that. And
Yeah.
again, listeners, like this is truly where journaling can help you and your practitioner, right? Like you moved, you got sick. Okay, well, it all started when I got a divorce. And then it got worse when I went from staying with my mother for a month, right? And then moving into my old place. These are the clues because truly our body is constantly sending us a signal of something. You
Oh,
can't
it definitely
dismiss what's
is.
going on, right? We just need to we need to connect the dots, basically. And I think the best way to do that is to track things and journal and write down, because whether you technically have Lyme brain or not, right? Like we forget stuff. I do, anyways, all the time. I
Oh,
still to this day, I
absolutely.
blame it. Oh, well, it's that Lyme brain. I'll use that till the day I die, I'm sure. I worked hard to get that title. Went through a lot to get that title. So yeah, I love that. Definitely is kind of figure out your environment.
One of the other big ones I have found that kind of fits within this, the hidden infections, is and this comes out of my training with Teitelbaum on chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. One of his teachings is always look for intestinal yeast overgrowth. So there's a screening questionnaire I like to use in my practice to do that, which it looks at what are the risk factors, like were you on steroids at one time? Have you been on antibiotics before? Were you on birth control pills? These are risk factors for getting too many yeast. And it looks at what kind of symptoms do you have and how intense are they? And we score it. And basically, if you score over 140, I have found that there's a good chance you might have intestinal yeast overgrowth. Or I have found, I should say it a different way, I have found treating for intestinal yeast overgrowth when somebody scores over 140 usually gives some good benefits in about 80 to 90% of the time. And so one of the things I have found, for instance, a woman that came to see me from Indiana, I grew up in Indiana, but she came from there. And when she came in, she was like mid-20s and she was just had lots of pimples and acne on her face, just lots, more than she should have for that age, basically. And so one of the things I know from working in this realm is sometimes too many yeast triggers imbalances in the intestines, causing chemicals to be get into the bloodstream that can lead to pimples and acne. It's not that the pimples and acne are yeast, but it's a manifestation of too many yeast. So I started talking with her, and sure enough, she just her yeast screening score, I think, was like 300. And so all I did with her was I said, yeah, you've got positive Lyme test, you had tick bite, but I don't want to put an antibiotic in you or even an herbal antibiotic right now. If you have that many yeast, we're just going to flare you up by triggering more yeast. So let's clean yeast out. And again, another situation where about 2 to 3 months of cleaning yeast out, we never had to touch the Lyme germ. She was well. So that's another, the two hidden things I'm really careful to look for these days is intestinal yeast overgrowth. And I don't care if they come in with their positive IGenix, BART, or Babesia test. I just know to look deeper and to look for too many yeast and look for mold as potential solutions, actually, like solutions. Like we can solve your
Yeah,
problem by
like,
just dealing with
okay,
these.
maybe we have to treat your Lyme, but I know we have to treat this, right? And then go from there. I love that because, again, like we get Lyme. Who knows? Maybe you've had your whole Lyme your whole life and you've never had a symptom because it's coming from these other things. So, yeah, that's incredible. So, question for you. So, we're talking about Candida overgrowth, right? And people get confused. We all have it. I mean, we all have so much stuff going on inside of our body, but normally we have that strong foundation, that strong terrain to where it doesn't take us down. I know one of the giveaways for most people is having, that white coat on your tongue, right? Like that could certainly be. I know during my personal journey, I constantly had yeast infections, right? I never had one in my life before. Like, what is this? And so When you're talking about candida overgrowth, there's a lot of talk in the community about SIBO, right? So how can you explain to the listeners like kind of what the differences between both of those are? Because there's a lot of things going on in our gut, right?
So I'm thinking of intestinal yeast when somebody has a lot of gassiness and bloating, and you can see that in small intestine bacterial overgrowth as well too. So I understand they can look a lot alike. And so the other symptoms I'll look at for yeast, I'm going to ask people about sugar cravings. In females, are they getting vaginal yeast infections fairly regularly? If you have sugar, do you feel a lot worse for it? Often, if you have too many yeast, people feel can feel worse when they have sugar the next day. So, and then these disorders where somebody is gassy and bloated a lot, my first thing I will do is go after yeast first. I acknowledge that some of that gassiness and bloating might be from small intestinal bacteria overgrowth, which is a different issue. But it is also possible and so let me rephrase it. So yeast is a large intestine issue. Candida yeast is primarily large intestines. Okay. All right. There is another condition where yeast moves into the small intestines, and which is where SIBO is. SIBO is bacteria overgrowth in the small intestine. Too many bacteria are in the small intestines, fermenting food, creating gas, basically. Okay. But we can also have a situation called SIFO, small intestine fungal overgrowth, which is candida yeast in the small intestines too. All right. Now the
Haven't heard of
problem
that
is,
one. Love learning new stuff.
SIFO. So there's SIBO, which is bacteria
SIFO.
overgrowth. SIFO, fungal overgrowth, which is candida yeast in the small intestines. And then you have candidiasis, which is really large intestine yeast overgrowth. Okay, now that by going after intestinal yeast and people that are gassy and bloated first, the things I use for that will take care of SIFO as well too. All right, and the reason I'd like to do that first is when it really comes down to it, we don't have a quick, easy test for SIFO. We have some testing we can do for SIBO, but we don't have anything for SIFO. Okay. So gassy and bloated, I have found just treat, whether it's herbal or whether we're going to do prescriptive options, let's work on getting yeast out. If in the end we get yeast out and I think we've got yeast gone and you're still gassy and bloated every time you eat, then I might start thinking about SIBO. And what I like to do to look for that, to get some guidance at least, is to do breath testing, which you have people, there's test kits you can get that you swallow some sugar, and then you're going to blow your breath into these tubes over the course of 2 or 3 hours. And you're going to see, do you have high levels of hydrogen sulfide or of methane? And that's how you diagnose it. The problem with SIBO, though, is that the breath testing, what it will only find it 70% of the time. There's 30% of people can still have it and have a negative breath testing as well too. But
No matter what type of testing you use, like there just isn't one that's more accurate.
I mean, technically the gold standard for SIBO would be as if you can talk your gastroenterologist, your specialist, into taking an endoscope and moving it down into the small intestine, sampling some of the liquid in there and see, is it yeast? Is it bacteria? But you can't get anyone to do it. They just won't do it, unfortunately. So,
And that's interesting that you bring that up. So literally, I learned a very valuable lesson. Well, I learned many things along my journey, but one very valuable lesson I learned was unless a woman has a shirt on that says baby or coming soon and pointing to her belly, I will never ever ask when your baby's due. Because that happened to me a few times because I literally looked like I was 9 months pregnant. And it was, you know, was it the inflammation? Was it, you know, everything combined in that? And a
Sure.
lot of times we just think, oh my gosh, I'm so inflamed. But yeah, you
Right.
probably have something. You know, now we can't just say candida or SIBO. Now we got to say SIFO.
Yeah,
We can
yeah.
have all sorts of things going on, but that is why we look pregnant when we are not.
Right. No,
Wow.
I get it. I
Okay.
get it. Yeah. There's another thing I've started doing too. So this kind of fits within more and more, there's more and more science now growing about the importance of the intestinal microbiome and what happens when you have imbalances that occur in the healthy bacteria and even parasites that normally live. You're going to have healthy parasites that live in the intestines too. And so there's we can get intestinal dysfunction for when we get imbalances in the healthy organisms that live there. And there's, research in the last 5 years, 10 years now, it's just been astronomical in terms of the growth that we're having about the importance of good balance in the intestinal microbiome and what happens when we don't. And more, I like thinking of the gut, the intestinal microbiome, all the germs that live there, as the brain of the brain. As so, your intestinal microbiome actually directs your brain. It directs your mental health, directs your immune system. It directs your
Like
joints.
listeners, literally it does. Our gut is like
Yeah,
our second brain. Like it really
it
is.
totally is. And some people would say it is the brain. I mean,
Yeah,
you
right.
make that
Yeah. It might
argument,
be the
it's the
first
brain.
brain, and then this one is our second one.
Yeah. Yeah, so the importance, I think all of us have wondered or been aware for some time the importance over the immune system with the gut too, but it actually is, it directs your heart. I mean, it's everything. So one of the things I will do if I've treated yeast and try to create balance and we're not getting anywhere, and I've looked for SIBO and we're still not getting anywhere, or even sometimes just right away, I'm starting to do a lot more microbiome evaluations of the intestines. And these days I'm starting to use a newer lab, which is based out of New York State. It's called Jonah, Jona. And they've got a they have, I think, the best tool now to look at the whole breadth of organisms that might be in your intestine. So other ways to do it would be like a GI map or something called a Genova diagnostic stool test. GI Map and Genova basically use genetic probes to look for like 40 germs. That's it. They only look for 40 germs. Okay. And now 40 may be wrong, it may be 45, but anyhow, you get my point.
Right.
They're only probing for certain germs, and then they look at that as a means of figuring out balance. What Jonah's doing is pretty interesting. They're doing a technique where they literally take your poop and they carve up all the material into its genetic sequences. And then they take those genetic fingerprints and they use AI to compare it against the genetic fingerprints of every organism possible to truly tell you what's in there. No one else is doing that right now. And yeah, so
No.
you get some really interesting results. And then they take that and they use it. They look, working with AI, they come up with solutions of things you can do with diet or supplements to improve the health of your gut. If you do happen to have some bacteria or germs that aren't supposed to be there, so actually infection, they don't tell you what to do for those. They tell you, talk to your doctor. So that's where I come in. But I get a better snapshot of what might be there as well too. So
Yeah,
that's
that's an I
been,
love hearing that because, you know, for years I've always said if a doctor tells you to do a stool sample for parasites, run, go the other way. Like there just isn't an accurate test for
There's
that.
not a
There
perfect one, but this one has
there's
a better
not.
chance. This has a better
Okay.
chance than some of the other ones.
That,
And
yeah, no,
I
it sounds
agree with you.
fascinating.
I agree with you on that parasite front. We don't have a perfect way of testing for parasites.
Right.
So,
I mean, because, you know, listeners, if you listen to me at all, you know, I talk about poop a lot, right? It's just part of the thing. But I mean, literally, because I did several of them during my journey, and I would see a parasite in my sample I sent in, and it's completely clear. We saw, and so I've just, lost faith in that. So I love hearing
Right.
that there's more research being done,
Yeah.
and there really
Yeah.
are a lot of things going on kind of behind the scenes that maybe a Lyme patient going through the journey isn't really seeing. They're sitting back going, gosh, we need more help. We need more help. There really is a lot going on behind the scenes, and more studies are being done. Of course, not fast enough for our liking, right? But it is
Sure.
happening. And that
Sure.
sounds like one of them that's moving forward. So that's awesome.
Sure. Sure. Sure.
So, all right. So much good information there. And so that was kind of, are we still, and I know we probably jumped around because I probably asked a different
Oh, we've been
questions,
hopping around.
but
Yeah.
we have been. So where do we want to move on to next? What topic do we
But
want to battle?
so let me go to the brain body kind of feedback loop too. So,
Probably my favorite. So I'm
yeah,
excited for
yeah,
this.
yeah. So, and where this really can come into play is in people with chronic infection that have been treated a number of times or years and are not getting better, or got better to a point and they're just not getting there. I want to look at this brain connection. And then the other th people I'm going to look at it in is in people that have extreme sensitivity. The people that basically, take a whiff of whatever you want to give them. And then, I mean, it can even be not even be an antibiotic or an herbal antibiotic, just a whiff of anything. And they're having severe exacerbations of their condition. And so when people, the super sensitive people, there are two primary areas, things that I see right now. One is usually there's going to be an element of mast cell activation. And a second element is how you respond to what's happening in your body. And that is controlled by an area of your brain called the limbic system. So the limbic system is the area that controls your adrenaline, anti-adrenaline. It controls reproduction, it controls your diet. And if it gets stuck in an on position, you're going to be more reactive to those. Your body is going, not you, but your body is going to be more reactive to those abnormal sensations that it has. It might release tons of adrenaline in response to that one little thing that doesn't feel right. So the brain actually starts holding the, causing a holding in your body of the physical symptoms or the reactivity. So fortunately, there's some programs out there you can use now to retrain that area of the brain. And one of the bigger programs is one called Gupta program. There's also a program run by Annie Hopper called Dynamic Neural Retraining System. And then there's another one called Primal Trust. I tend to steer more towards Gupta. And what Gupta is teaching these days is it's relaxation techniques, breathing exercises, meditation, physical movement, how to find joy. All these are ways that can help relax that area of the brain and cause it to let go. And Gupta has done had independent research of his techniques and has found that people that do it have a reduction of about 50% of their symptoms. Now, I will tell you, when I explain this to people, they're like, I don't want to go through it. I don't want to spend 3 to 6 months training my brain, blah, blah, blah. But if I told you that this pill that I'm going to give you would give you a 50% improvement, you would be all over that pill. At least that's what I tell my patients, right? So yeah, it may be a little more involved to do a Gupta, but if in the end it can give you a 50% reduction in your symptoms, why not, right? So Gupta has the research. Annie Hopper and Primal Trust, they also claim about 50% improvements, but it's based on their own patient survey, not true independent research. But
Good to
any,
know.
yeah, any of these can be valid though. So it's one of those things that I'm adding in a lot more these days, definitely in people that are medicine or herb sensitive. And I'm also looking at it in people that have been being treated for a year, 2 years, and really were just kind of locked and not getting better. I'm going to be looking at doing some of the brain retraining for that as well too. Yeah.
Love that. And it, I mean, you just really nailed it, right? If you would easily swallow this pill
I
if there was even a chance that you
Right.
could feel better. And so I truly, I'm sure I sound like a broken record in the community because I am always, your nervous system is
Yeah.
the huge piece to the healing of your body. Like it
It
just
truly
is.
is.
And
Yeah.
when I, you know, we all want instant instant gratification. Like it's kind
Right.
of what our world is. And it truly is consistency that we need to do it. You're not going to wake up one day and say, okay, I've been doing my breathing exercises several times a day and it's been a week. And oh my gosh, I'm all better. Like that's not how it's probably going to happen. It's going to be
Right.
months down the road when you're going to be, you know what? Gosh, I don't have this anymore. Wonder when
Right.
that happened. And that's when journaling can play a really big role in our healing journey. So
Sure.
now that I practice and preach about the nervous system all the time and how many there really are so many free tools out there, right?
There really
We
are. Yeah.
definitely have to allocate our financial resources very carefully when we go through this journey. But you are talking about the limbic system. So just
Right.
for the listeners, give us a quick little breakdown on where that limbic goes into kind of the nervous system, how it all pieces together.
Yeah, so the limbic system, and I may not be the best source on the details of it, other
Okay.
than my,
Well, we'll
yeah.
work through it
So
together. Here we go.
the limbic system has one of the key components is something called the amygdala. I think the hippocampus is part of it as well too, but these are structures deep within the brain that communicate with the frontal part of your brain. They communicate with your vagal nerve, which controls your adrenaline, anti-adrenaline system. So it's kind of a hub that communicates with all the key elements of the brain. And so if it, again, if it gets stuck on, you're going to have symptoms throughout the body, basically. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, and that's perfect because truly it's the way I kind of like to explain it is just so you have your nervous system, right? Well,
Yeah.
okay, here we go. So you have Lyme disease and then you have beyond. You have all the
Yeah.
things that go underneath it. So you got the nervous system and then you got the limbic system, the vagus nerve, you know, all the things that kind of are into the hub of the nervous system. So when you're
Sure.
talking about the nervous system, there's so many things that we can work on. And do you really think there is a majority of people out there that don't believe that our nervous system plays a role in our healing? You see that a lot?
So anymore. I
Not
think
anymore.
you,
Okay, good.
yeah, I don't, I, you know, if I raise whether they want to do the work,
A
you know, that
different
it
story.
takes,
Okay,
right, yeah.
yeah.
Because, again, I think we have, people want, look, they've been sick for so long and they've got this diagnosis now of I've got infections, I've got Bartonella, that's the cause of this, or Babesia. And what they want is a pill to get well. A lot of people do, right? And I wish it was that easy in these illnesses, right? But they do want that. So to try to, my job is to help people understand that, the pill, herbal antibiotic, prescription antibiotic is just one part of this equation. It is not germ killing alone that when you are this ill, that's going to get you well. We've got to balance out your adrenals, maybe with some ashwagandha, for instance. We've got to lower inflammation in the body because inflammation cytokines suppress your immune system. So we got to get you on some curcumin or glutathione to help with that level of system dysfunction. We've got to help you to start getting sleep. But believe it or not, a majority of what you can do for sleep is probably behavioral lifestyle. It's like setting a common sleep time each night, no caffeine after noon, knocking all alcohol out, turning off your blue lights. That's an interesting one. People do not want to turn off their blue light devices at nighttime.
They
But
don't.
anyhow, what I'm describing here is there's all these levels of involvement. And yes, meditation for some may be the way to calm reactivity or limbic system retraining, maybe, but those ways of going are much more time intensive on the person than it is taking a pill to do something. So sometimes you have to get people to see the benefit of doing that or work with them to see the benefit of those ways.
Yeah. And so when, and this is just maybe a personal opinion or a personal question I'm going to ask you. So when you're talking about, you know, Primal Trust or the Gupta program, and you're seeing, you know, they're saying about 50% of the people, do you feel that a patient at home, if they did the free things, right, or the really inexpensive things to work through our nervous system issues, do you think they're capable of getting the same results?
I honestly don't know. I don't know. I
Okay.
mean, because the one thing that's what though on the one hand, maybe, but on the other hand, some of these structured programs help keep you engaged on all the various levels that you can, right? So in some ways, the structured programs might be a bit more comprehensive or be able to do all the comprehensive things because you're part of a group that's doing it basically too. So sometimes being
And
in,
hold yourself more accountable, I think.
exactly,
Yeah. Okay.
yeah.
I'm just curious because I
It,
never
yeah.
did any of those types of retraining, but it was a
Yeah.
huge piece to my puzzle, right? And
Oh,
so I
yeah.
just consistency did the things that I could afford to do, right?
I got it.
And
I
so
got
I
it. Yeah.
preach that a lot. I'm like, if you really can't find a practitioner right now, if you don't have a lot of money to treat right now, like let's work on detoxing our body and work on your nervous system. Like,
Right.
I guarantee you it's not going to hurt you, right? You're
Right.
not going to get worse from it. So I just was curious of your personal opinion
Yeah.
on that. And
No,
again, we're
I,
all so different, right? We don't. It's hard to
right.
judge.
But I agree with, I mean, I do agree with you that the mind body connection, and particularly what I'm raising here is the limbic system connection is huge. It's just absolutely huge. It's just like the microbiome, and the importance of the microbiome is huge here too. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So much good stuff. So much good stuff. So, did we miss anything or do we need to dive deeper on any of them?
Yeah, the only thing, I say one of my big four is look for the hidden infections. And what I would say is, I already brought that up, but one is I always try to look at the outset for intestinal yeast overgrowth. It's huge. I can't state that enough. And then what I find in during treatment, if I'm working with somebody and they've been getting better and all of a sudden everything looks a lot worse, about 80 to 90% of the time, it means too many yeast moved back in. And even on herbal antibiotics, you can get too many yeast, although the chances of it happening is way less compared to prescriptive antibiotic regimens. So, yeah.
Okay, so when you say that, I just want to clarify when, because we do, we're feeling really good,
Yeah.
we've been treating, and then I had an outing yesterday, or I
Yeah.
ate this yesterday, and oh my gosh, I'm crashing now. So is it like, because it is kind of that little bit of a roller coaster, right? Like you take a million steps forward and a half a million back. Like that's
Right.
kind of the way it goes.
Right.
So when you're going to put it in relation to maybe a candida issue, when they have that setback, do they bounce back from that setback like they would normally, or are they normally kind
Yeah.
of stuck there if it is a candida issue?
So if it's a candida issue, what I'm looking for is somebody that's had like a marked disruption, a marked turn back in their symptoms that seems to go on for a week or longer. I might start looking for intestinal yeast. I admit there's, we can go out and just have a bad diet day that will make us feel bad the next day. What I'm looking for is a complete decrease. Their energy was 7 out of 10. Suddenly it's down to 3 out of 10. And this has been going on for a week and a half. And now they're getting more achy. It looks like they're just had a total collapse of the treatment. I
Okay.
want to look and say, okay, I know too many yeasts can do this. Let's go looking for it. And the simple way I would do it is just review sugar cravings. What were they eating before they got worse? Look for intestinal gassiness and bloating. And one of the key things in some people is development of too many pimples or acne. So I'm always looking for it. And so that's
Okay.
one thing in terms of hidden infections. The other hidden infections, I think most of us have been good about looking for and testing for Borrelia Lyme. I think historically, because our testing wasn't as accurate on the Babesia side and on the Bartonella side, that many people have not been adequately worked up for those conditions. I know myself, in terms of how I've approached it, I always looked mainly to get Borrelia testing because it was more accurate. And then I would use symptoms to kind of guide me as to whether Bartonella might be there or Babesia might be there. And
Okay.
I still do that. I mean, so Babesia symptoms would be things like that might indicate Babesia would be night sweats, really poor energy, panic attacks, racing, skipping of the heart, migraines, frontal headaches. Those are things that make you
That and
think
that air hunger, right?
air
That air
hunger. Yeah.
hunger.
Yeah. And then an odd one, some people have frequent deja vu experiences with Babesia too.
Oh, I
But
haven't heard that. Okay, interesting.
And then on Bartonella, I'm looking things that might make me think of Bartonella would be pain on the balls of the feet that you can get better as you walk in the morning. Neuropathies of any kind make me wonder about Bartonella. Bartonella has an odd nervous system agitation where people will feel like they're vibrating or buzzing on the inside. It's not an external thing, but it can be an internal symptom. Anyone with severe anxiety or depression or neuropsych issues, generally you got to think about Bartonella. And that would be a big thing, I would say, in hidden infections. If there is a primary psychiatric presentation to this illness, you've got to go looking for Bartonella as part of this too. So what I used to do is just rely on those symptoms. But these days, if I have somebody I've been treating for a while and I haven't really addressed Bartonella and I'm not really hearing the symptoms of Bartonella, I might go test these days to just see, am I missing that one? Same with
Okay.
Babesia. I might go test for it. And my favorite screening test these days is Igenix has a test method called an immunoblot, which is an antibody test. They're testing based on validation studies can find these infections when it's present about 93% of the time, which in the world of testing is pretty accurate. And
Yeah.
why it's pretty good is their Borrelia test looks to see if you have antibodies against eight strains, not just the original East Coast strain. And then for Bartonella, as part of their antibody test, it looks to see if you have antibodies against the family of Bartonella. And we think there's 15 Bartonella strains that you can have. So we will pick all those up. And then on Babesia, we think there may be 12, 15 or so. And they're because they test at the genus at the family level. If you're positive there, that so it has a better way of finding it basically too. So I used to rely a lot just on the symptoms to guide me on Bartonella Babesia because testing was not accurate. But these days, when I am stuck with a patient and I'm pretty sure they have Lyme, I think we should have been doing better and they're not, and I don't hear the symptoms that scream at me Babesia or scream at me Bartonella, I'm going to be a little bit quicker to go ahead and do further testing to figure that out too.
Okay. And so the immunoblot is good for basically the three Bs.
The three Bs. It's
Okay.
not inexpensive, so I often don't do it right away, but their immunoblot, for instance, for Bartonella would be $450. For Babesia would be $450. And for Borrelia it would be $450. But again, at a time, if I'm not making enough headway, then I think we do need to go look and make sure what we're missing, basically. What is that hidden infection that
Right.
we might be
Okay, so
missing?
it's not just called immunoblot. It's the immunoblot Bartonella,
Right.
immunoblot Babesia. Okay, all right. Just to clarify, yeah, and it
Yes.
is, I like the way that you think about that because we could spend a lot of money
Oh, yeah.
getting tests through, Igenix or Armin, and yes, we do kind of need to know what we're dealing with, but we
Right.
also can kind of, do a clinical diagnosis of it. Like what are your
Yeah.
symptoms? Like it
Yeah.
screams it,
Yeah.
right? So
Exactly. Yeah.
is your money worth putting into a test? Sometimes we need that validation, right? On
Right.
paper, I get that, but maybe your money would best work treating what you're
Right.
dealing with. So
Right.
it can be kind of a hit or miss to trying to figure out which way to do that. So I have a
Yeah.
question back to you when you said the vibration on
Yeah.
that internal, right? So
Yeah.
I'm the overachiever. I had the three Bs, right? Like most people do. And
Yeah.
man, that was horrible for me. Do you or have you experienced somebody without Bartonella but mold? Do you hear that being a symptom of mold? Because I kind of feel like I think it is.
Yeah. So there's any, so what that vibration buzzing internal feeling is, it's nervous system agitation. Something is agitating the nervous system. Now, in my practice, I would say about 90% of the time I see that falling into the Bartonella camp. I have had people with mold toxicity that did not have Bartonella that had symptoms of that too. So it could be a symptom of nervous system agitation, of which mold toxicity can do that. So,
Okay, interesting. So much stuff. It's just fascinating to me to learn all these things that you're talking about, and just
Sure.
how much further we've come, right? And just hearing different perspective from different practitioner from different practitioners, because
Yeah.
we can't treat everyone the same, and not all practitioners treat the same. But truly, our bodies are all the same. It's the
Yeah.
foundation. It's our terrain. Like, where do you attack first? Should we just go to the bottom and build up, right? So I love your whole outline of what your approach is. I think it's fabulous. So Dr. Ross, if you don't mind, before we wrap up, because I could probably talk to you all day long, but I want to, and for the listeners out there, if you've followed me for any length of time, you know that my mission is to share information and resources and to empower you to be your own advocate, right? So oftentimes we don't hear about maybe negative things, about any particular treatment until maybe you did it and had a negative side effect, right? Like it's kind of like you buy a bright red little four-door car and you've never seen one in your life, right? Until you buy it. And then now they're around every corner. So I like to just have a platform to be able to share information. And so I'd like it if you wouldn't mind, Dr. Ross, to let's talk about SOT therapy for a moment, because I don't think it's something that it's been around for years, right? Like, they've used it for other things, but it's really getting really popular within the Lyme community. And even so for AGS, alpha-Gal syndrome is one of the things that in the SAAT acupuncture is another thing that's been working well for AGS. But let's hear from your perspective, because you're not a super fan of SOT. So share with the listeners of why, and maybe you could even share some, maybe just some thoughts to put in their head about things that they should write down and ask, right? For so they can find out their own information. So we don't know what we don't know. So lay it on us. What do you know?
So supportive SOT, supportive oligonucleotide therapy. Basically, the idea behind it is that you can use nucleic acids, which are genetic material, to block the ability of the germ to make proteins by taking over your cell production apparatus. Okay, so basically, there's the protein production factories in our cells are called ribosomes. And the ribosome interprets RNA, the RNA blueprint that it gets from the inside of the cell. And that RNA says, make this protein. What SOT does is it has another type of RNA strand that attaches to the RNA that's supposed to go into the ribosome, blocking the ability for that RNA that says, make this protein for this germ to grow. It blocks it from getting the message to make those proteins. Okay. So it's called supportive oligonucleotide therapy. Now, SOT has been around for a number of years and is approved by the Food and Drug Administration as a drug to treat certain viruses and certain other infections. And so the FDA has said, this is a drug. I want to be clear about that. It has said, this is a drug. Okay. I say, now, how do we have SOT in Lyme then? Because FDA has not approved SOT treatment for Lyme,
And
right?
then why don't your primary doctor do SOT if
Yeah.
it's
Well,
FDA
yes.
approved?
Well, so we don't have SOT approved by the FDA for Borrelia or for Babesia or for Bartonella. And drugs that have been approved as SOT for other infections have to go through human safety studies. And when we look at the history of that, there have been some companies that have tried to develop SOT for a certain virus infection, for instance, that when they did the human safety studies, they found out it could lead to long-term harm in people, right? Now, there is a company in Europe called RGGC or RGCC that is doing SOT, developing SOT for treatment of tick-borne infections. And at this point, they have not produced any adequate studies showing it works, nor have they done any human safety studies. We actually have no human safety studies done on this at all. And so that raises concern for me, okay? The other thing is they have done one small study, but in their study looking at whether SOT might help, they were looking for decreases in viruses or in bacterial load, I should say. And they didn't do anything to ask patients whether they had any improvement on it at all or not, but they just looked at decreased germ load, and they had to do a statistical manipulation to be even able to show there was a reduction in germ load. So it's not clear to me that it really, it was a statistical manipulation they did. So I know that there are a number of
Which shouldn't
practitioners out
be, I
there.
shouldn't even say this, which shouldn't be if it's an FDA approved thing at Big Pharma.
But no, but I
Sorry, a
want to
whole
be
nother
clear.
conversation, right?
So it's a statistical manipulation that they did to be even on that small study to say it might do something. And so the reason I'm not, okay, and then there's another factor that comes into this. I know there are a number of people that do this that do have some improvements. What I'm not clear about is whether it's sustained improvements from patients that come to see me. The second thing is anything that we give a person has about a 35 to 40% what's called a placebo effect, which I call a healing effect, which is just because you take something because you think it's going to help you, it will help you. Even if that thing is a sugar pill, it will help you if you believe it's going to help you. So a lot of people getting benefit that are paying their $2,000 to $5,000 for an SOT, they may not really be getting any improvement in germ load. They just may be getting a placebo effect, which is great. I mean, that is something beneficial, okay? But what's really caught, there's two major concerns I have. I have a couple people that have come to see me that have had SOT that I believe did lead to autoimmune illnesses in both of those patients. I think it triggered autoimmune. Now, because RGCC has not done adequate research about safety, I can't tell you for sure whether it came from that thing or not, but I know that's when they developed it, is after they had their SOT. So I have to caution people. I know there's a big rush of everyone rushing to do SOT right now, but I would say there's a lot we just don't know. I, as a practitioner, also have decided not to do it because I am concerned if there is an adverse reaction to SOT that I could be accused by my medical board of using an unapproved drug. Again, as I have said, in all other forms of things called SOT, the FDA has said we regulate this as a drug. And just because your provider is getting it from RGCC kind of hidden through the back door does not mean it would hold up as a drug, basically, or that they couldn't come after you for that. So what I would say is, yes, I understand people are getting benefit. I wonder if a lot of that is placebo effect. I am concerned about safety long term in people, and I am concerned that people are paying $4,000 to $5,000 for a treatment for something that just doesn't have any science behind it showing it actually works. So those are my thoughts on it.
I love it. And I'm all about the clinical studies, right? The randomized, double blind, placebo, all of that. Like that's the best way to prove something that works, right? So no, that's good information because we don't know what we don't know. And it's so important to share the information on both sides, the good, the bad, right? What could be. And so I love that you're cautious about that because for those of you who may be new along this journey, years ago, I mean, doctors, I don't even know if I could have a podcast like this without you losing your license, Dr. Ross. Like, I'm not sure, right? So there's a lot involved in it. And so we always want to protect our practitioners. We want to keep them safe and protect them so that they can continue to treat us because we really need you guys in this community to help us. So I appreciate you sharing me your perspective on that. So, well, what did we miss? Probably a lot, but anything else we need to touch on or call this round one and we'll move on again and at a later date for round two.
I'll share one thing with you. So one
Okay.
of the things that I have been really finding success with lately is, a number of years ago in the world of tick-borne infections, there's a lot of research that occurred about 5, 6 years ago now looking to see what we could do for what's called Persister Bartonella and Persister Borrelia, which is those germs that go into hibernation and regular antibiotics don't work for. And what we learned out of research out of Johns Hopkins University, there's a variety of herbal antibiotics that can address those things quite well. And so I work a lot these days with a three product or three ingredient, well, maybe more than three, but I like working with cryptolepis, Japanese knotweed, and a pill that has in it cinnamon, clove, and oregano. And all of those through Johns Hopkins were shown to be useful. The ingredients were found to be useful at killing growing persister Bartonella and Borrelia. And then the crypto is useful against Babesia. Clove in the cinnamon clove oregano is useful against Babesia too. So where I use that a lot is, first of all, it tends to be where I start these days because I don't want to use prescriptives right away as a means of protecting the intestinal microbiome. But secondly, what's nice about this combination in those patients where I'm not clear if it's Bartonella they have by symptoms or Babesia, this puts them into a treatment that's dealing with all three, or I should say management that's dealing with all three at the same time. So that's been one of my bigger ones and one thing I've been happy about in my practice as well too. So
Good. I love that. Yeah. Cryptoleptis, Japanese knotweed. And then when you talk about cinnamon, clove, and oregano, do you have something in your office that's that combination, or do you have an online thing people can find that product or?
So if you want to know the kind of products I use and even that one, they could go to my Lyme disease information site, treatlyme.com, which is Treat Lyme by Marty Ross MD. There is an area that is about products that I use in my practice. And if you just search in the search bar, you'd be able to find the Cryptolepis I recommend, the Japanese knotweed, and then the cinnamon clove oregano you can find there as well too.
Perfect. And as always, listeners, any of the big things we talked about, the websites, everything will be in the description of this episode. So I think the only last important thing I need to know for sure, do you do telehealth or are you in person only? And if you do telehealth, I know we mentioned earlier you're in Washington. Are you limited to certain states or tell us where you what people
It's a
you
good
can
question.
help?
So I am prior to the pandemic, I think a lot of us were doing telemedicine across state lines without being licensed in those states. But after the pandemic, it's going to be hard for any physician to argue with their medical board that they did not know that they're supposed to be licensed when doing telemedicine, what a person is. Okay. Now I know some practitioners still do it, but I'm not. After the pandemic, I stopped doing telemedicine in areas I'm not licensed. So what I do, I have two services that I offer right now. One is a full service where I will prescribe, diagnose, order tests for you. And regardless of who you are, where you live in the country, I have to see you in office for a first visit. If you are a Washington state resident where I am licensed, I can do your follow-ups by telemedicine after that. Okay. All right. Then for other people that still want my opinion, I am more than glad to give opinion. And I call it a remote consult visit where I can review your case, but I can't make official diagnosis and I can't prescribe and I can't order tests for you, but I can tell you what I think needs to be done. I can say, these are the herbs you might want to try. These are tests you might want to talk with your provider about, et cetera. So I can give guidance that way. And so for people that live out of Washington State that do not want to come here every visit to get their care, then I do offer that as an option. And a lot of people are just taking those notes and going to their primary care. And some of the primary care doctors are helping them with it. Some are not, but it gives them avenues. And clearly, I will design things in a way that you can do it all herbal if you want. And then you don't necessarily need a prescriber to help you with some of those too.
Perfect. Okay, so let me just clarify it for me. So Washington, you're just good across the board. You'd come in for your first appointment in person. Now, the latter part of it where you can, not diagnose, not treat, but share your opinions on things. So I'm going to call that more of like kind of a coaching program, right?
I call it an educational consult.
Okay, there you go, an educational consult. To get those, do you still have to have a one-time in-person visit with you? No. So he can just do educational consults with you. I love it. Okay.
So for people that are interested in that remote educational consult or in becoming a full patient where I can do all the prescribing, et cetera, I have a separate practice website, which is martyrossmd.com. And you would just click the big orange book now button that will take you to a page that will describe both of those types of visits in greater detail as well too.
Perfect. Okay, listeners, you heard it. It'll all be in the resources for this episode in the description. So, Dr. Ross, this was fabulous, like truly enlightening. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for taking time to share with me and the listeners your expertise. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it too, Tanya.